And we are back, Stripe Show Podcast. Another week post Masters. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Stripe Show Podcast is now officially presented by my new sponsor, wait for it, Access Golf. Access Golf, the new presenting sponsor of Stripe Show Podcast. We can't thank them enough. Ken Hollingsworth, the owner of Access Golf right here in Jacksonville, Florida. Great group. I've known about them for about 2 to 3 years now. A company you're going to be hearing more about here in the next couple years. Does so much great work with a lot of young players, aspiring touring professionals, ladies on the Aspen Tour, guys that work their way up Canadian Tour, Latin Tour, up Korn Ferry Tour, and eventually, like Nicholas Echevarria, who made the cut at the Masters. He was an Access Golf, still is, player. He's made it all the way to the PGA Tour, and he's got 2 wins now. Jessica Porvaznik, an LPGA Tour player now. She got her card last year. So just some cool stuff, cool work, a group that's going to be doing a lot of vacation packages coming up where you can actually take one of these young professionals with you and they go and play in the event. So some great locations coming up. I'm looking forward to talking about them. I welcome them aboard. I also welcome a returning guest, a favorite of mine, coming to us from Illinois in his basement, which I don't know now. I mean, for those that are watching on YouTube, I think this might be rivaling my studio. Jake Thurm joins us with Pac-Man in the background. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. And I'm pretty good at Pac-Man too, but yeah. So it's 42 degrees and the windy city is living up to its name. It's so windy outside. I just got back from walking my kids to school. And yeah, this is, you know, this is a fun place down here. I don't always like when they play down here, but you know, this is definitely I kind of sit back in the couch over there, which has a cooler in it. And I just I take a deep breath, and then sometimes, only for a moment, I allow myself to think that I've made it. So
yeah. No, you have made it. I mean, look at that putting green. Beautiful mural of number 7 at Pebble, it looks like. Yeah, those watching. And I know I see Pac-Man. You mentioned the old Asteroid game, which was a lot of fun. Do you have Excitebike? That's my real question. Do you have Excitebike?
So over in the corner over there, I mean, I could take you around the room if you guys really wanted to.
Yeah, go ahead. Show us. Yeah.
You want me to?
Yeah, point it. Let's see it. Yeah, before we get going here. We got a lot to talk about.
This is topical. There's my Masters putter.
Look at that. Wow.
We'll talk about this. I didn't know we were doing this. So there's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's NBA Jam. There's Star Wars, if you can kind of see that under there.
Yep.
Cockpit Star Wars. Atari 1983. There's Terminator.
Wow.
Okay, let's go over
nice
here.
Bar, 4-seater.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom.
Is that where you watch the Masters on Sunday?
It's definitely a room that I actually watched on the simulator and hit balls in it with my son, because my son's the biggest Rory fan. Got a couple beers on tap back there, and then my wife's gonna kill me for showing you this because it's an unfinished area. But I mean, we're friends, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
This is gonna blow your mind.
I mean, no one's watching anyway, so it's all right. Yeah. Oh,
that's
wow.
Right.
Oh. That's good.
I got a urinal right next to the bar.
That's I think you've outdone me. I mean, I think yours is better. I think it takes the cake. This is, I need to come up. I need to, you know what? Maybe I'll come up and watch the Mariners play the Cubs and Wrigley, and I can come down there and pass out on your couch. Would your wife mind that or no?
You know what? You wouldn't be the first professional to pass out on that couch. So, Tim Petrovic, if you're watching, he went to one of our block. He went to one of our block parties, and you know, he only had to go to one to realize that he should never go to another. So he was down here rolling putts and sleeping on that couch over there. So,
so your kid watched Rory, and of course he's on cloud 9 this week and super excited. You watched it. I watched it. I'm sure everybody listening and watching to the podcast right now watched it. And in reflection back now, what, almost 48 hours, I don't think I've ever watched a tournament round like that in my entire life. Like, that was truly a one-of-a-kind experience as a fan watching a guy trying to win a tournament. It just wasn't a tournament. We know that. He's trying to complete the Grand Slam. But I just the highs and lows of that, the emotion, I've never been that invested in one round of golf. And I go back to the Tiger days and take nothing from it, but that was different for me.
Yeah, you know, the funniest thing is I knew I was going to hop on here with you, so I actually made sure to watch it. I don't think you can avoid it. I wouldn't have tried to avoid it, but a lot of the times when you're not coaching in an event, I think some of the coaches out there can relate. You keep yourself busy, but I was definitely watching because I knew I was going to be on here and we were going to be talking about it. So, gosh, I told my buddies, strong Greg Norman vibes. I mean, you and I are of that generation, right? Where, you know, people always say he could have had three or four. I don't ever think that's true. You know, that's like saying the Braves should have had more than one World Series. The thing is, it's hard to get one. So the consistent putting yourself in position to get it usually will lend itself to one, maybe two. So now I don't know if Greg Norman should have had four Masters, but he probably should have had one. Of the four, right? Oh, yeah. So, because he had the Saturday, you know, 1986, he blows it right into the bunker, just like Rory did. By the way, he didn't have a wedge. I think he had like a 5-iron or a 6-iron in. Shows you how much the game's changed there. But he blew it in that right bunker in 86. He had the Saturday slam, I believe, in 87, was it? If I got my years right. And then, obviously, 1996. The only difference is, so I was getting strong Greg Norman vibes. The only difference is Rory got it done. And I was so – it's so funny. When he three-putted the first hole, which, by the way, is so easy to do as a guy that's been there, you know, coaching three times and walked that golf course a lot. So easy to do. The first green is very difficult for anybody. Three-putted the first green, and I'm like – yeah, it's probably not happening. And because Bryson's right there. So, to come back and then, you know, obviously birdies nine. And then the funniest thing is I still wasn't willing to give it to him. And I really wanted to see that tee shot on 10 because his tee shot on 10 in 2011 was closer to the cabins than it was the center of the fairway. And those cabins are really hard to get a golf ball to. Like, you have to really try, and that ball better have eyes. I mean, that is quick left, quick low left.
Oh yeah,
to hit those cabins. So, when he put it right down the middle, I then said, so remember on one, I'm like, this ain't happening today. And then on 10, I'm like, this is over. Like, he's got it. Like this, really? All demons exercise because he stripes it down 10, and then he dumps that wedge. I'm not saying Rory's like a legendary wedge player. Okay. Statistically, not at that level, statistically, not necessarily a strong suit. But hit it left.
Yeah. Well,
hit the wedge left.
Patrick Reed just 4 or 5 minutes before that. I mean, he hit it 30, 40 feet left and it rolls all the way down the hill. I mean, that's a shot, whether you're hitting a full 4-iron into it or a little 3/4 spinny wedge, the ball's got to be left of the pin considerably. Yeah. So yeah,
you don't even have to hit it good. You just have to hit it left. And then all the while, you know, the shot on 7 over the trees and,
which was fortunate. You got a break there. Yep.
And honestly, sometimes that reminds me a little bit of Tiger. Sometimes I always thought Tiger was at his best when Woods was in the woods, right? Because he could just create. The shot on 15, hooking it around there. I'm sitting there going, okay, so he's putting the entire tournament on this one shot, and then he pulls it off. And at no point, I mean, you know, Fax is going to get a lot of love for that putting, and he probably rightfully so, but at no point did I feel like he was putting particularly well, especially from short range. I felt like Bryson was putting actually extremely well. Yeah. And he puts it all and then 15. And then again, I go, well, this is over. He just hits that shot. He's got this tournament's done. Right. And then, you know, we get to 18. He's in the middle of the fairway. The only, Gosh, I wish everybody could go to the 18th hole at Augusta and realize how tight those trees are.
Oh yeah.
You know,
that's all the green is.
And you can't even see it because it's straight uphill. So, he puts it to the middle of the fairway. He's got a gap wedge in there. And again, this is over and, they box it in the bunker. So, I was getting strong Greg Norman vibes where maybe and I started to fast forward it. I was sitting there going, if he loses this tournament, then he really isn't going to win this tournament.
No, that's what I was feeling, the same thing. I mean, if he loses this playoff, I don't know how you come back from this. It was a roller coaster. I almost had some different feelings than that. Like when he doubled one, I wasn't worried because Rory chasing is way more instinctive than Rory with the lead. Tiger with the lead, it's over. I mean, that was another, I think, a difference that comes from this is just not only how great Rory is and how much we should celebrate him for five major championships and completing the Grand Slam, one of the greatest players of our generation. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he is insanely great at what he does. But at the same token, I think in my mind, like it proves the gap between Rory and Tiger. I mean, Tiger does not make those kinds of mistakes down the stretch. He just didn't. I mean, the shot on 13, there's no way. I think Tiger had to literally have to go outside and get some fresh air after that shot. Like he had to have a cigarette or something to – like, what are you doing? Why is that ball right of the pin? And I'll tell you another one. The shot on 11, that around the trees, the fact that that ball got to the front of the green, I mean, what is that ball doing there? Like, you have to blow that thing right of the green. Up, there's so much room there. You pitch it across. I mean, these are the things that become apparent to me, like, wow, how great and just – you know, the best of all time in my mind was Tiger. And it's just amazing to me that there is, I think, a significant gap there between a player like Rory, who is just over the top, unanimous Hall of Famer, one of the greats of all time. And yet that mental side and course management side, Tiger, A+. Jack Nicklaus, A+, with all the same skill sets, can do all that. I mean, look, the shot that he hit around the tree on 15, I wasn't surprised. I mean, that's a shot. I bet you Rory could pull off 7 out of 10 times, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, a high draw, Rory's got high draw. I mean, there ain't no problem hitting a high draw around the tree. Now to do it finals on the Sunday when things are, you know, when the wheels are falling off, that was big time. So yeah, I mean, it was just up and down and my goodness. I remember high-fiving dudes. I didn't even just like, it was. What am I like? I was watching that tournament like I was watching the Seahawks play in the Super Bowl. Honestly, I was that emotionally invested in it.
I remember in '92. You can obviously the full rounds on YouTube and stuff like that. Freddie Couples on 15 also hit that slinging hook, and they asked him about it later, and he put it on the green too. They asked him about it later, like, why would you take that on and not just lay it up? And he always said, you know, that downslope with the wedge on 15 is way harder than the shot that I was about to attempt. Yep. So I'm sure that entered Rory's mind. It's not just be aggressive, try to make eagle, if not make birdie. I also think, again, with what Freddie said, you know, 1,000 years ago, is actually slinging that hook around the tree is easier than asking me to hit that downslope, delicate wedge, control the flight and the spin and make it freeze. You know, that one... Mm-hmm. That one can come back at you too. So you might as well hit the 5-iron from far back or 6-iron or whatever Rory did.
It's going to be fun now from here. You know, does he's definitely going to be more freed up. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, where can he take this thing to? I mean, he's won the Players now right here in my backyard, which I watched almost every shot Rory hit. And I think he had his B game at best at TPC Sawgrass and won. I think at the Masters, he did have his A game for the better part of 2.5 days. I mean, there was a stretch of golf there after, you know, he made the silly doubles coming in on the first day, but that stretch up to that and then after that was brilliant golf. I mean, A game type of stuff. Rory doesn't make double on 15, which I was a little surprised that he hit it with such a square face, that shot, because he's so good at that, opening that face and just ripping the cover off it, which we saw many times. You could make the argument that if he finishes off that round one, he wins by 7 or 8. I mean, he was was playing at a different level of golf. And I've always said, you know, there's two guys in the last 10 years that, you know, put Tiger aside, of course, that when they have their A game, Rory, and when golf actually mattered to Dustin Johnson, those were the two. And they took it to a level that I don't think I've seen from anywhere else. You mentioned wedge play. It's a good transition because I want to get into Rory and some of the technique stuff.
I was going to say this. I know you saw this on Instagram that Bryson hit, I think it was 1,096 shots on the range at Augusta this week, and Rory hit 378. As much as everybody is sitting there going, well, you know, because Bryson worked so hard, he hit so many balls on the range, I actually had a different take. I go, no, I think one guy had it and knew he had it, and the other guy was trying desperately to find it. And actually, that's the first time. Hey, kudos, Bryson. It's the first time I've ever seen you completely rely on your short game and keep yourself in a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Because that's not his best. That wasn't his best ball short
game. No, not at all. His iron game was not tuned in by any stretch. But he's made great gains in his short game. And look, you can hit 1,000 balls after your rounds of golf when you don't have a wife or kids. I mean, we have a wife and kids. I mean, that phone's buzzing, like, hey, what's for dinner? Johnny would like to see you. I mean, okay, well, you know, I mean, those, you got different people pulling at you. It's a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, Bryson.
How good's Bryson out of a bunker with the equivalent of a 6-iron, right? Length.
Yeah, right.
And he's holding out all the time. I mean, it was substantial for his short game, his putting. It was, his wedges were great.
He's always been a great putter, always.
Yeah.
But his short game has made big strides, and he gets his iron game dialed in. Obviously, he's a wonderful driver of the ball. I mean, Bryson's going to win more major championships. I have no doubt. And with that kind of short game improvement, he can win a green jacket. There's no doubt, because you can't fake it around there. You've got to be able to get the ball up and down. You see players like Patrick Reed, who won there and ran up the leaderboard. That dude's brilliant around the greens. Scottie Scheffler's got to. That dude's brilliant around the greens. Tiger, yes, power, brilliant around the greens. You got to be able to do those things. But we talked about the wedge shot, because I want to get to that. So Rory's technique, it's always interesting with these players. You've worked with a lot of people over the years, and sometimes when I read reports, I listen to a player or whatever, I think there is a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know, when it comes to, hey, I'm working on this, I made this change. But then I look at the video, I'm like, that doesn't really look different, you know? It doesn't look different at all. I go back to like Phil Mickelson's days when he was cruising, working with Butch, and you know, like, hey, what are you working on? Well, we're trying to stabilize his lower body in the backswing. We're not trying to, you know. And then I watch him play, and his left hip, his left knee's fully straightening. And, you know, I mean, just like, okay. I mean, a lot of it is that I know there are changes taking place. I know that feel versus real is different, but there is some smoking mirrors here when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I want to get into Rory's stuff, and I'm going to play this video first. So check this out for our audience. This comes from Jay Park. He did a good job of this analysis. Listen to this.
I love what Rory McIlroy is doing with his golf swing. He's softening his trail elbow so that he can get his hands in front of his body and the club a little more laid off, because he struggles with getting too deep, too early. The club gets across the line, which then makes him struggle with his approach game. Now, who else struggled with this? Well, the one and only Tiger Woods. 1997, he got the club up and across, which made him fire his hips and dump the club underneath. As you can see here, very similar positions. So how did Tiger fix his swing like he did here in 2009? Well, here's a clip from 2000, a historic year, where he's really working on getting his hands really, really high and the club extremely laid off. And Rory is doing something very similar now. Will Rory be able to fix his swing like Tiger? I don't know, but what I do know is.
So that was Josh Park. He's a good follow on Instagram. And, you know, I thought he did a good job laying it out there as far as, you know, Rory, interesting, following a lot of the same things that Tiger, you know, went down. And then Tiger at a young age, would get the club a little across the line, club face a little shut, and the dude would just rotate and open up. I think Rory historically has been.
Tiger probably drove it better doing that, to be honest with you.
But, yeah, Tiger did probably drive it better doing it that way.
But the flip side of that is, do you remember in the late 90s when he's blowing sand wedges over the green and stuff like that? It wasn't the Tiger sand wedges or scoring clubs that we came to know and love later in his career when he was truly dominant.
Yeah, so he made the change. He went from Butch to Hank. Hank got a little more shaft point, a little bit more left. Club face not quite as shut. His body, his left knee had a little bit to do with that. And couldn't be quite as explosive coming through impact. I got a picture here of Rory. This is probably, let's see, 12, 13 years ago on the right. You know, when he was just cruising. And then on the left, you know, a big difference in I would say where that shaft is pointing. It's always hard to get apples to apples perfect, you know, at the same position, same shot. But you know, you get pushback on that from. But I, you know, you watch enough video, and you definitely see Rory 12, 13 years ago, maybe hands a touch higher and the club pointing a bit more left at the top. Now, Rory, you know, historically get his hands a little bit deeper in the club shaft, a little more down the line, the left wrist. A little more extended, left thumb a little more underneath the grip. So technically, a little bit across the line. Not so much shut, but just a little bit across the line. Now, as he just mentioned, you know, he's kind of working on trying to get his hands higher, trying to get the shaft a bit more laid off. Here's kind of a mini version of that. Watch this here. And you've seen Rory, Jake, over the years use a number of swing devices to
– Yep.
You know, I've seen him use the Pro Scent. There's his old, right? You can see his hands go deeper, more across. Now he's like, nope, watch this. Hands higher, like we saw with Tiger. And then the club shaft more laid off. And so you take all that in consideration. And this has been months and months of this. And you hear analysts and others give him credit. Like, yeah, I think he's made the changes. And now, therefore, he can hit the shots that he wants to hit. And, you know, those types of things. But – The reality is you then go to God, I had a video here of him. I don't know where it went, but anyway, I videoed the wedge shot on 18 on Sunday. Great look of it, and it looks exactly like the picture on the left. Exactly. I mean, it doesn't look any different, Jake. I mean, it really looks exactly the same. So my question to you is this, because Rory clearly hit a lot of improved wedge shots. He hit a lot of nice controlled wedges. He looked more confident with them. Mm-hmm. Butch told him, hey, you need to hit more three-quarter knockdown shots. You know, flight it. So my question is the improved wedge play, is it so much because the shaft is any different at the top, which doesn't really appear to me, or is the fact that he just decided to hit more flighted wedges, and we know what the value of a flighted wedge is from a control standpoint. I think it's more of the latter than I think the position at the top.
I completely agree with you. You know, there's an old axiom with the Navy SEALs: when the pressure is on, you will always revert back to your lowest level of training. And this is obviously Rory's default pattern. Internally rotated shoulder, right arm gets a little bit narrowed deep behind the seam of his shirt. A little bit more wrist extension, like you said, little thumbs more underneath it, club face rotated open. Now, a little bit more nowadays. Now, every single one of those, I could make a strong case for, well, that's a power move, right? Like you would see a lot of that from a long drive guy, more wrist extension, club face allowed to rotate more about the shaft, more elbow splay, more internally rotated, all in the backswing. Like you could make the argument, and let's not forget that off one, was it the Saturday round or the Friday round where he hit one 371 off of one?
He carried the bunker on one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know the Green Jackets are scrambling now, you know, after seeing that shot. They're like, they're going to be teeing off from basically like the clubhouse.
Well, so, that bunker's going to be another bunker's going to be another 8 yards deeper.
Yeah, there's no question. They're out there today. It's like, yeah, no, yeah. Sorry,
there's no doubt.
Members can't play. We have to dig up one. I used to be around like Wesley Bryant and George because of his father. We had a training aid company, and they got to play there as teenagers. And I believe it was George. George put it over the bunker on one. And I want to say it was Hootie Johnson, but that it was one of the chairmen. He saw that, and then he went immediately in. And then all of a sudden that bunker was a little bit deeper because he watched a high school kid put it over it. So, so feel versus real. Well, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. You and I both know that that's more similar than it is different. What Rory chooses to think about that is up to him. But there's other ways to improve a wedge. That's why I love what you said about Butch. There's other ways to improve a wedge than solely on technique. He said hit more three-quarter shots, hit shots lower. You could do that and actually not change the technique. You could also, again, lowest level of training. Lowest level of training doesn't have to be just the technical aspect of a golf swing. It could be of the training of distance, right? So there's three forms of practice. Obviously, we know block practice. What they say overseas is serial practice, but I just call it sequential practice, the training of distances, and then randomized, right? So if he was adding more kind of wedge ladders and then more randomized training without touching his technique per se, like, again, I believe that video that is what he's trying to do, but that's not the default pattern at this point. Mm-hmm. So again, I think the thoughts are good. The problem with swing thoughts is you never have enough time to have them. That'd be one. But for two, you could improve your wedges at home with the same technique, just with better practice habits. And again, yep, it doesn't always have to involve a technical change, right? So especially when you're under, you know, mental load, right? When you're under mental load, it's probably going to be more similar than it is different. That's why. Oh, there you go. Beautiful.
Yep.
That's what. And is that the block party into the right bunker?
No. This was perfect.
This shot. Okay, here, that one was perfect. Okay.
Yeah. Watch this again real quick. Look at that shaft at the top. I mean.
Yeah.
Right there. Look at that. It's the same.
So I go back to the old, obviously one of my main mentors was Dr. Jim Suddy, and he wrote an article, again, 1,000 years ago, it's probably in the 90s in Golf Digest, and he said driver dominant, iron dominant, and wedge dominant swings. And that was the article, and I think with driver, he had Greg Norman, go figure, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember who the other players were. Wedge could have been Tom Kite, if I'm not mistaken. But basically, the point of that was, it's not that you can't show growth, it's that he was making the point that some dominant movements kind of lends itself to success to a certain part of your bag. Mm-hmm. And those are your strengths, and you have to keep your strengths strong. Rory's driver is a weapon.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. It's not a shield. It's a weapon. He uses it to attack. He uses it to so there's no question that Rory's action as it currently stands today is very, to use that term from that old Golf Digest, very driver dominant. Now, with that said, to keep your strength strong, it's obviously made him one of the all-time greats. You know, his wedge has to be looked at, and these guys are always trying to improve. The thing that drives me nuts is when they try to improve something that probably can't be improved upon, right? Like, they don't want to hear that, but they've gotten to the point where, gosh, you're one of the best in the world at this, at this particular skill. I don't know if we should be messing with that too much. I think we should be leaving our strength strong. So, again, I would be very interested to know if his the way in which he practiced wedges. Everybody knows the story, and I was coaching at that U.S. Open, at how Dustin Johnson, because you used him as an example earlier, became one of the best. Everybody knows about his driver, became one of the best wedge players from 100 yards, basically. And all he did was pull up one number on TrackMan and just figure out each week to the half yard how far it flew. And that was valuable information for him. And then all of a sudden, the guy that had more wedges than anybody knew to the half yard how far his wedges flew. And then all of a sudden, he was dominant for a while. He was the number one player. He won at Oakmont. I believe there was only one or two other people that were even under par. Streelman actually finished top 10 that week. So that's why I remember it so well. So, again, did Dustin change his technique with wedges? I think so. I think so. He was definitely three-quarter in flighting. It's just like Butch's advice to Rory. But I also think it was more sensitive or hypersensitive to the fact of, okay, how is that flying? What is the trajectory? What is the spin rate? To what, again, yard is that carrying to? And then I'll just write it down in my book, and then we'll just, when I have that distance, we'll just go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more the three-quarter nature, because you think about what, you know, Rory would – his miss with the wedges, he would struggle with distance control, and you think about that big high finish, you know, you can block it, right, like he did on 18. Then he can hit some of those club face pulls, or maybe that face would start to turn down a little bit, and he would tug it left. All right, well, so now you think about, well, now he's hitting a knockdown. What does that suggest? Well, the knockdown is going to suggest that he's got to deal off the face a little bit more, which probably – is going to incentivize him to kind of turn the face down, square it up. Handle's probably going to be a fraction lower and more synchronized with the body rotating around the corner to the left, even given the same conditions at the top. So it just looks like to me that the flighted wedges give him a little better sense of kind of organizing things through impact. And obviously net result is controlling the trajectory and how far that ball is carrying. And he hit some really good shots. And I think that did probably come into play there in that last shot a little bit. It didn't look like the absolute full tilt wedge. It looked like he did, you know, try to flight it a little bit. But I can't even imagine, and we'll finish with this because I do want to move on to a few others, that this conversation about laid off versus more cross the line. There are players that try to get more cross the line. And I think it'd be interesting for you and I to take 10 minutes and kind of deep dive some of these other ones. But I'll finish with Rory in saying that, you know, as I reflect back, there's not a person on the planet other than maybe just a few players that can even relate to the amount of pressure that Rory was facing. There's just, you can't even relate to it. I mean, it was probably the most, real, you know, I guess relatable to watch someone just be physically altered because of the pressure, and in real time was trying to deal with it in front of what were the metrics on TV? 12.7 million watching. You know, like in real time, you're watching someone in struggle. You're watching him fight demons. Right, you're watching him trying to be normal when he's not normal, and it's completely uncomfortable. And it's like, man, there is just a real relatability to that. And I think it's just a microcosm of who Rory is, right? Because he is very open, and he lets you in, and to watch that come full circle and finally finish the Grand Slam, it was the best viewing of golf television that I've ever witnessed.
Well, and that's what you were. I mean, he's out there basically. He's like naked, right, with everybody watching, right?
Right.
If it was the PGA Championship, like for Jordan Spieth, that eludes him for the career Grand Slam, I think he probably has two Masters by now, right? Mm-hmm. But it just happened to fall on the Masters, so the increase. You can't tell me that golf course isn't perfect for him, right? So yeah, the fact right, yeah. that. The fact that that was left, it was more than just winning the Masters for Rory. Mm-hmm. It was completely up against history. And I believe our boy, Brandel, said more people have walked on the moon that have won the career Grand Slam, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
He was battling issues of the past with certain shots on that golf course. But he was battling the demons of history where – there's a lot of great players that came up one major short. Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, Lee Trevino. I mean, I'm just naming it. That's three guys in the top 10 right there. Byron Nelson. There's a lot of guys. Walter Hagen, Snead. Like, there's a lot of guys that got three legs of it and never got to the fourth one. And every single year they were up against it.
How about this guy? You know, I mean, he's got three legs of it, and this is the pressure now. Go to Jordan Spieth. Before we get to Spieth, little message from my sponsor. If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figure out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf Putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com. All right, so speaking of trying to complete the Grand Slam, we go to Jordan Spieth. And I put this up there, Jake, because Jordan, when you look at this picture on the left, this is when Jordan was winning those major championships. Mm-hmm. And you can see the shaft really matched up to the left arm and the face very square. And then you look at where Jordan started to go when he started to struggle, and the shaft is laid off. Now, Rory would probably kill to have a look similar to, you know, where Jordan is. He's trying to feel that on the right, where, you know, Jordan's like, he gets it too laid off. I mean, that picture on the right is where, you know, Jordan would get it. He would get that club pointing way left at the top, and you see these rehearsals that he tries to make where he's really trying to kick the shaft across the line, and of course he's trying to exaggerate it to get himself,
and look at the face angle,
more like on the left. Yeah, look at the face angle. And that's, I think with Jordan, like it's the shaft and the face, right? Where when you get laid off, the face changes, but when he gets it a little more across the line, the face looks much squarer. But it's interesting. Jordan's one that's trying to feel more across the line. Here's another one that I think a guy that has really lengthened his swing out with the help of Chris Como. He's definitely got the club pointing more down the line. I think Xander there for a while, Jake, was getting a little short at the top and getting a little runoff where the shaft was too laid off.
Yeah, he was his default miss under pressure, or like I said earlier, mental load would be a big wipey cut that he'd lose to the right. You know, when you're looking at these players, I ask a simple question, but it's always met with you can't have something universal that's multivariable. So I ask a very simple question, but then after that is layering in the sophistication. So in other words, are we trying to and this is an old Blackburn who I know has been on your show. Are we trying to maximize, and are we trying to harmonize? So when I look at players' changes, and I'm not, you know, and again, I don't know players. I know their coaches just like you do. I guess I could kind of text Como right now and say, hey, what are you working on? But I like to figure it out on my own. I like to watch. If you ever want to know what a player is working on, watch their rehearsals. Because that's lending itself to what they're trying to feel, and it's usually some kind of exaggeration therapy to bring about change. So, and then my question is always: so is this going to be a maximize or a harmonize, right? So, in other words, are they trying to hit it further? In Xander's case, it's probably both, right? He's trying to avoid that wipey miss, high spinny wipey miss to the right that he used to have, and getting it a little bit more, like you said, down the line, even a little bit across, get it to swing a little bit longer, probably works against that. He probably was very fade dominant how he was before. And now my guess is he could probably work it both ways, but he could also hit some draws just for good vitamins on the range to incur swing health, right? Like I should be able to do it. It may not be what I'm going with 9 out of 10 shots on the on the golf course, but I should be able to show you that just because you asked on the range. So there's no doubt Xander has gotten longer doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that Rory's gotten longer doing what he's doing. He even made a comment about how he used to speed train, at least initially. He actually doesn't do a lot of that. And yet he's getting in you've seen it on YouTube, he's getting in the 190s in ball speed. So it's interesting. Maximize or harmonize. Now, I'll tell you what, if you need to find the golf course, like if your issue is you can't hit it in between the nylon ropes, then that might lend itself to something else. If somebody gets trapped, stuck under from the inside, probably would benefit more from, and if, let's say, their predominant pattern would be more of a pull fade, they would probably benefit from the Sahith on the left more than the Sahith on the right. But that's what I'm always trying to figure out. When I see a player making a change, I'm like, okay, is this to get longer or honestly to find more golf balls?
You know? I think, you know, obviously Spieth went through some speed training there.
No doubt.
And he's definitely gotten longer. I think when you look at Spieth's changes and why he's trying to get it more organized like he used to at the top, what feels more across the line, it's definitely to find more golf balls, right? I mean, there is a speed element there, I'm sure, but to me with Spieth, it's just strictly accuracy, right? Now with Xander, it is probably a little bit of length in there and just maximizing that turn and being able to hit that draw, which when he does, man, he has pounded that driver out there. It is noticeably different. With Sahith, I don't know. I think Sahith probably, if I had to guess, and I agree with you, I think with Sahith, I think under the gun, he probably gets shorter, you know, and I think that erosion of the swing, the turn isn't maximized, right? And so you can't be giving up distance when you have that frame and that length of swing to work with. So I just think for him, it's probably under the gun. To me, it appears that it just gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And I think Sahith could probably hit that wipe from there as well. But yeah, it is. I think you said harmonize or what was the other one? Maximize. Yeah. I'd say
Xander and Sahith, if you're looking at the, you know, the left and right there is, you know, without having them in a 3D suit to quantify how much, I'd say both have increased amount of pelvic rotation in the backswing.
Sure.
Right. So look at their lower bodies. Definitely more restricted. With Xander when he was getting laid off and Sahith, definitely a bigger turn. I mean, we just used to call it hip turn, and that I think that would resonate with your audience. Just a fuller turn of the hips. If the heel comes up as a result of it, so be it. That's probably a good thing for a lot of people out there who don't have like the dissociative properties of being able to separate their upper half from their lower half. So, I mean, go figure. Turn your hips. Turn your torso. Swing your arms, and you'll probably get a little bit more speed as a result of that.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that when you look at these backswing changes, I actually had Max Homa, but I somehow, like a bonehead, deleted it out of the system. but I remember when Homa was working with Blackburn, you know, he definitely got the club face or the club shaft a little bit more laid off, club face more shut. I mean, he was getting it kind of vertical and across with the face open, and he just, you know, sacrificing too much shaft lean and controlling the dynamic loft at impact. And so he was one that fits more into the category of feeling a bit more laid off there. This was years ago when he made those changes, and it was good to see Max actually play some good golf this weekend. It's been a while for him, and you know that had to feel good on Sunday to shoot under par and run up the leaderboard a little bit.
Yeah, that was starting to look a little scary, wasn't it? That got rid of his coach, got rid of his caddy, and got rid of all 14 clubs in his bag, and then wasn't playing well. So that's we know the cautionary tales of players that have done that in the past. So it was good to see him. Blackburn told a great story down at the top 100 at Cabot, where he said when he was working with Max, Max goes, and you'll love this because it goes to the wedges. And this is when Max was, you know, at least at this point in his career, probably playing his best. And he goes, my lob wedge. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, it's going 90 yards. And Blackburn's like, yeah. He goes, used to go 100. And he goes, yeah, but it goes 90 yards, whether you're happy, mad, sad, pissed off, everybody watching you, nobody watching you. He goes, it just goes 90 yards every time. Right. So that just goes to show you that, it's kind of like Tiger said, you know, 20 some odd years ago, the key to golf is being pin high. So the key to golf, especially as it applies to a wedge, is having it repeatedly go the same distance that you intend every single time, whether you're happy, mad, or sad, whether you double bogeyed last hole, you're on a heater and you've gone birdie, it has to go the same distance.
Well said. Yeah. And working on wedge game is important. Certainly do a lot of that in here in technique. Usually for most amateurs, you're trying to get them to flight it a bit lower. They, you know, they don't have a lot of shaft lean and you throw it up, and that's always a good opportunity to get in there and start structuring the things you got to do to hit the ball with shaft lean. Oftentimes for the first time for many players, It's hard. There is no, everybody's different. There's no doubt. But of the thousands and thousands of lessons and people that I see in the patterns, I mean, there are times where, yes, the club can get across the line and it gets detrimental. But more times than not, I would say for the average player, when you're working with them, especially men, you know, you're trying to, it's like the, when I talk to teachers, young teachers coming in, I was like, look, you're going to learn a lot when you teach. You're going to formulate your own opinions based off what you're seeing. And then when you start making changes, then what do you see? And then where does that take you? And then where does that take you? Right. And so you get this catalog of patterns that you fix over and over and over and over again, and patterns that you've seen over and over and over and over again come into your studio, and they look at you and say, I've plateaued. Like, I can't hit it anymore. I've been a 15 my whole life, whatever. And more times than not, Jake, it's like, you know, you got to get them structured in the first part. Like, don't suck it inside, get it up the plane a little bit, get it going up the top side. And you get those wrist angles formulated in a way where the face, you know, more times than not is not open. You get the face squared, a little bit closed for a lot of people. And oftentimes I'll, you know, maybe kick it just slightly across the line. And as you kind of get them up the plane, you get the wrist angles structured and the body's turning and the club's not laid off. And all right, now change direction, you know, and it's like the club starts to come, you know, back down from the inside. They've got the club face prepared. Now they can start turning and they're incentivizing shaft lean and these things start to take form. So I know it's, everyone's different, but more times those are the things that I'm having to do.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's different, but the problems remain the same, right? Yeah. The master skill in golf is ball first contact. And there isn't too many 15, 20 handicaps coming in that have mastered that skill. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do whatever you can to help them strike the little ball before the big ball, right? So, and then after that, my guess is at a 20 handicap, they also, and by the way, making ball first contact correlates with eventually hitting a draw. For those out right there that understand D plane and 3D ball flight, the amount of down also means that the club's moving out. But I digress. So the master skill is ball first contact. And then the next thing is hitting a predictable but powerful curve, because the problem is, and I love people are like, how they're like, you know, my favorite thing is an amateur who says, who hits his driver 180 yards and says like something like fairway finder. I mean, that's an indictment of skill right there. Your most powerful shot needs to also be your most predictable shot if you're going to level up in your handicap. I'm sorry. You're not out there to hit stingers yet. I hope that you get to a scratch or plus level where that becomes a valuable asset, where you get to actually make decisions about not hitting the ball so damn far. But until that time, if you're a 15 handicap, everyone better than you hits it further than you. And what's going to correlate at the amateur level, right? We only talk about the key differentiators on TV, because all of them basically make ball first contest and relatively hit it in the center of the face all the time. So we're going to talk about club head speed. This guy has that. This guy has less. This guy has more. We're going to talk about key differentiators at the highest level. Mm-hmm. At the amateur level, it's the quality of the contact, right? Right. Before you speed it the heck up, and by the way, you and I are both, you know, ball speed, club head speed's biggest fan. But before you do that, the quality of the contact, if you're going to speed it up, make sure it's good, right? So if you want to get longer, ball first contact and centerness of hit relatively is really the key avenues to getting longer and hitting more greens first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's have a little fun here. I got a swing we're going to look at. We always finish every show with a little something we call it. All right, this is Bubba Jennings sent this to me, and I got a face-on view here. This is Bubba's swing for those that are watching. Very nice move here. A lot of good stuff.
Love it.
And when you look at this, Jake, what comes to mind? I didn't get much feedback on what his ball flight was, but if you had to kind of – obviously that club face looks a little closed at the top. But yeah, overall, some nice things happening here with the body.
Absolutely. So
you know what, I'll give you the stage.
Yeah.
I like how that left knee comes across. You know, that's something with a lot of amateurs. Like they're restricting that left knee, that lead knee. They're not letting it point behind the ball. And just letting someone, let your left knee flex and point a little behind the ball, and they turn their right hip, and it's like, there you go, right? And all of a sudden, right side of the pelvis gets a little higher, and now things kind of can work up from there. All right, take it.
I was going to just say from a rotational standpoint, I think actually he moves very well and is moving in a way that he is capable. I'm going to say from a mass movement standpoint, he is a little bit what I would call continuous to the trail side all the way to the top of the swing. And my guess is that can come at a price with low point. Listen, you absolutely should shift in your swing. And as the club gets longer, that'll be more pronounced. I'd get him to shift more from, you know, kind of address to takeaway, maybe even lead arm parallel, but then have him start recentering back the other way as he's rotating to the trail side. Get up and do it.
Yeah, demonstrate this because I think this is good advice for him.
Right. So we'll move this, scoot back here. Okay. Yep. So, it's a hot button debate. Some guys don't like the teeter-totter. Some do. I've had good success, especially with amateurs, as long as their intent is correct.
Yeah.
So from one until two, when we take we'll grab this Masters putter. How about that?
We got Pac-Man, Asteroids, and now Masters putters. It's unbelievable.
2017. Yeah. That was James Hahn, right?
Yeah, wine cellar down there too, I'm sure.
I didn't show you that, did I? So, love wine. I want to be a wine and a watch guy.
Okay.
I desperately want to be more cultured, but I'm a jeans and t-shirt guy. All right. So from one until two. So let's picture we're on those boards. So, right. There's going to be this move, right? One until two, right? Like that. Yeah. Now, again, the rotation is great. And even if he still was shifting at about lead arm parallel to him from there, I want him to finish his rotation and go back the other way, right? Elite level players, when you put them on force plates, they all are truly different, but there are some commonalities, and the commonality is they get pressure in the lead side sooner than the poorer players. So basically, I do want to see some shift, but I'd like to see at least 3/4 of the pressure go into the trail foot. And again, everybody goes, well, how would I know that without a force plate? Just those little teeter totters or something like that. So you go boom, boom, and it's down over here. Okay, that's going to be. The reason that's important to get that load in the trail foot early as opposed to continually late is because that's going to provide the push away to move toward the target. Okay. So that's going to push that way to go that way. So get the teeter totter down just like this, right? And keep all that beautiful rotation he has, but then we start making the teeter totter go down this way, right? So most amateur players don't have enough horizontal push in their trail foot early enough to ever get into their lead side sooner. And then the funniest thing is with him, I think actually, and again, we're looking at a good swing. Mm-hmm. I like his hips are moving forward, probably, again, a little bit more continually. I'd love to see his chest get up ahead of that too. I think when I talk to players like we're just seeing, they're telling me how they want to just use an old term, kind of bump the car door.
Right.
And I always go, let's not bump the car door. Let's have the SWAT team break in. So they go like this to break in the door. So that's what I would do. I'd get it loaded over here. And then I'm trying to.
There you go.
Right. Like that. That way my center of my rib cage and my center of my pelvis stay a little bit more in line and transition, allowing for early coverage. Then I push up from the lead side, tilt back, and I'm controlling that axis tilt away from the ball. But I've already solidified low point. So he's going to be lateral because he's still pushing towards the target, trying to collect the ball and make contact, whereas I want him earlier that way. That way he can push up and actually, in a way, go backwards. So use more vertical motion through the shot.
Good stuff, man. I like it. I think that's good advice for him. That's probably going to help him with that low point control and just, you know, squeezing it a little bit better, compressing it a little bit better at the bottom. He's Jake Thurn, man. He's one of the best up there in Illinois. He's one of the best in the country at what's your Instagram? I got your at USA Junior Golf Team. I know you do a lot there. And then you also have at US Sports Camps. I know you do a lot there. What's your handle on Insta?
It's at Jake Thurn Golf is where you can find me. All my programs are the ones you just named. I'm the Midwest director for the USA Junior Team and the US Sports Camps. So outside of PGA Tour guys, which is all great, fine, dandy, wonderful, it was always my goal actually to work with elite level juniors, especially in Chicago, which is where I grew up. So at US Sports Camps, we have camps that'll be going all summer. Number one camp in the country for Nike. And then at USA Junior Team, those are elite level players, next generation of high school and college players. So that's how I spend my day. I spend my day around juniors that hit it way, way further than me. But you know what? At this point, I can hit a wedge better than them.
That's right. That's right. And you know, the way you're teaching, man, they're going to have to push more than that bunker on one back. So that's where the game's going. Jake, thank you, man, for joining the podcast. Good stuff.
Thanks, brother. Good seeing you. Hope to see you soon.